cliffcentral.com. cliffcentral.com. Welcome 2017. Okay, so if you're looking for some inspiration for the new year, we've got just the right person in studio with me today. Joining me today is Raleen. She is a coach, a spiritualist, a teacher, a healer. So many beautiful things that you can use to describe. Raleen, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please. So the reason I brought you into studio today is because I think it's always really good to start off a new year having someone tell us about, how to live a happier, positive life. And I mean, I've seen you a couple of times and we've spoken quite a few times. And after every single time I see you, I leave the room feeling so happy and inspired. And I thought maybe you could do the same to our listeners today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'd love to.
So I think where we should start off is spirituality. I mean, you know, we often talk about religion and bring up religion. And spirituality to me, you know, and the reason I like spirituality is because it's kind of like you don't need to define it as such as one religion, believing in one God, believing in just one thing. It's kind of just believing like in a higher power or so. Could you maybe in your own words describe to me what spirituality is or how you would discuss spirituality or describe spirituality to someone else?
I think very simply one could say if we live in loving kindness and I mean, that's just a saying, but what does it really mean and where does it really come from?
Mm-hmm.
And being a shaman, I believe that we are all one. You know, the Native Americans say, metakoya oyasim, which translated means we are all relations.
Mm-hmm.
And if we live with that in mind and that concept and we kind of embrace that, we can then live in loving kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that we are all part of the same source.
Mm-mm.
And we are all striving for that love, for that happiness, for that. And we are all that. And we are all mirrors of each other. We're all mirrors of one another, of the universe. We're all part of it.
Mm-mm.
And living with that and having that in mind, we live with an open heart. And an open heart means that we are able to understand and to respond to things.
Mm-hmm.
And responding to things makes us see things very differently. You know, I mean, this, I keep reading how awful 2016 was and we all want to move on and live happily and make this new year better. But what does that really mean, you know?
Mm-mm.
And it's what lessons are we getting from all of these experiences?
Yeah. But isn't that inevitably what it is? I mean, so 2016 was a tough year for a lot of people. But, I mean, we learn from that.
Absolutely.
And when I speak to a lot of people as well, they kind of focus a lot on the negative and, oh, this happened to me, that happened to me. How do you think you can take that specifically and move on from it or take those bad experiences and move on to create a more positive 2017?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, living with an open heart. Firstly, an open heart means that you are responding. You are able to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going into that reptilian brain of, oh, somebody did me wrong, or I've suffered a terrible loss, poor, you know, I'm going to get revenge, or I'm going to make it better, or I'm going to do. It's standing back and actually saying, how do I respond to this?
How do you do that, though? So, I mean, the kind of natural response to any bad situation is anger, frustration.
Yeah.
How does one even start
by
standing back and looking and saying, okay, wait, let me assess the situation and see if there's a better way for me to deal with it as opposed to immediately going into anger?
Okay, well, our natural response is to go into our reptilian brain to react, fight or flight. When we step back and with our heart open, this loving kindness, as I said earlier, when our heart is open, we have choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we are able to be in a position of choice. So we can then automatically react and then we step back and we say, hang on, I've got a choice here. I can respond.
Mm-hmm.
If I respond, I'm in a neutral situation. I've stepped out of the drama triangle and I'm looking at the scene. So if somebody has done something wrong, for example, something that has hurt you,
mm-mm,
you're able to stand back and you're able to say, okay, so what is this person mirroring to me? What is this anger that they are, that I'm seeing from this person? Is it anger within myself? Is it stuff that they are now bringing to the surface that they need to look at. And you're able to assess it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the learning comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like, for example, last year was a bad year because we suffered a loss. We lost someone or mm-hmm. our relationship ended. Or sit back and say, why did it end? What made it end? What have I gained from that?
Mm-mm.
Was it working in the first place? Did I do enough? What made it? How can I make it better?
Why do you think we don't do that, though?
I think because we stay in our reptilian brain and we just react.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's
kind of like a normal instinct, natural instinct.
Yes, and we also, you know, if we've been wronged, we've got to get even. We've got to do revenge. Mm. And that's basic level functioning.
Mm.
It's when you step back and you say, is this going to serve me? Is it going to serve that person? What am I going to gain from this? And if you can stand back and say, well, let it go. And then people will say, I'm not going to let it go because then I'm a victim and I'm just letting people walk over me. But in actual fact, you're not, because you are taking the lesson from that.
Mm-mm.
You're looking at the mirror, you're looking at the lesson, and you, in fact, are growing and changing.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing in life that's guaranteed is change.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we change and transform? We learn. As soon as we get revenge, we're staying in that state of negativity.
Mm-mm. But, you know, so, I mean, when you often go to some of these motivational things and you read these books, and this is the problem, I think there's so much conflicting information out there.
Sure.
Because one thing people will tell you is don't be a victim. Don't allow people to walk over you. And you're actually almost saying the opposite of that now.
Yeah, no, yes.
So not saying you're wrong, but how does one, you know?
You see, if you step out of it and you remove the emotion,
mm-mm.
or you understand the emotion and you go through the emotion, acknowledge that you're angry, you've been wronged, you've been whatever the, you know, hurt. And then you say to yourself, okay, what is this hurt doing for me? First of all, how am I going to resolve this? If you go back and you say, I'm going to get revenge, I'm going to make you suffer like I suffered,
mm-hmm.
I'm never going to forgive you, you're standing still. Neither of you are growing. But if you stand back and you say, okay, you angered me, you cheated me, let's have a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about why you did this, what made you do it, how can we fix it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's communication, it's dialogue, it's openness. You know, if a relationship breaks up, oh, well, I'm never speaking to that person. But in actual fact, there's love there, there's a base there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something just wasn't working.
Yep.
Sit back, talk about it, and you resolve things. But if you stay in that revengeful, hurtful thing, you're not letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And letting go creates change, it creates growth.
Am I right in also saying if you don't let go, it could cause illnesses within yourself? And, I mean, not saying that cancers and all those things are started by negativity, but isn't that also a very big part
Absolutely.
Of what could impact your health?
Absolutely. You know, we live in our bodies, okay? So our soul, whatever, however you want to see it in your understanding, we are just living in this body.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get ill, that's the final manifestation of the healing.
Mm-hmm.
So all that has going on inside of you manifests outward. And if you don't address that, if you're standing still and you're staying in that revengeful, so in the victim state, in the whatever, and you're not really moving forward, it will manifest in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, because we don't often take note and are aware of our inner feelings, our, you know, who we really, really are, then your spirit says, hang on, you know, get with the program here. You know, spirit, the way I understand it, is a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And it will come around. If you have lessons and things that you need to experience in this life, it will come around and it will tap you gently. And you may not, you know, you won't even notice it. The next time it'll come around and it'll tap you a little bit more. And eventually, if you don't get the message, it's going to take a rubber mallet and it's going to hit you on the top
slap
of the head.
Slap you.
Yeah. And whichever way that you will respond to that is what your soul or spirit will do for you.
Mm-mm.
So if it takes for you to get ill, then that's what it will do.
Mm-hmm.
That's when your wake-up call will come.
Okay.
You know? You often find people that are really down and out or suffer terrible things, that's when they find their spirituality. That's when, and that's really when they awaken and they start to listen.
So spirituality, if we had to say compare it to religion, and I'm not too sure if you are, if you're the right person to ask this, and if you're not, please tell me. If you had to compare, say, spirituality to being a Christian, would you say kind of like the spirit to a person that's spiritual would be kind of like a person who's a Christian, what God is to them, if that makes any sense? Or is it not really even something you can compare?
I think we use different discourses to explain things. And and in my understanding, very often religion is used to explain things in a simpler kind of way, you know. And it's the layers of understanding, you know. And you know, I for example, don't believe
about that.
For me, it's as I said earlier, we are all one and the same. We are all part of the same energy. And if you see it as God, you know, some people say Hashem, some people say God, some people say, you know, we've all got different Buddha, yeah, whatever. But the principles, I believe that the essence of pure good religion is kindness. It's kindness, it's loving. And for me, you know, we use this word love all the time. And we don't really understand it. And love is the pureness. And some religions will use hell and damnation and fear and to keep you on that path of goodness.
Kind of like threatening a young child, saying if you don't do it. And that almost never works as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like I mean, I'm not dissing any religion or whatever else, but I almost do feel like that's kind of what religion does to us as well. You know, I myself, I'm a Christian, so I'm not saying anything bad about it, but it does kind of sometimes feel like, you know, if you do something wrong, you got to go, oh, damn, I'm going to go to hell, or, you know, I'm gay. What does that mean? I mean, that is also often a big fight that we do have because, you know, we had this conversation the other day as well about a Bible having been translated hundreds of times before it even became English. You know, and what's happened to that translation to the version that we're actually reading now. And I mean, for me, spirituality is almost just, it's kind of simpler because it's about kindness and happiness. And that's just what you're trying to teach, right?
You know, for me, it's getting rid of all the dogma and all the restriction that religion. And I mean, I've, as a young child or as a teenager, I went from Jewish synagogues to Christian to you know, all kinds of things, to Buddhism, to this, to that. And eventually I sat back and I thought, we're all actually striving or trying to understand the same thing, you know, and it's just the way that people choose to do that, you know. If it blows your skirt up to go to church and do that, then if that gets you there, then that's absolutely fine. You know, there's no, once again, no judgment, because if we are all the same thing, whatever we works for us works. You know, I just sometimes get a little bit anxious when it's, don't do that because you'll go to hell. You know, it's like watching a little child run and say, don't run, you'll fall. And what does the child do? It falls.
They run, fall, yeah.
So let the child run, and when he falls, get up and he'll scrap, you know, he'll wipe up the whatever and carry on. That's his learning. And, you know, some people like those restrictions. They like to be told things, and it's fine. If it works for them, it works.
You also do a lot of work with children, though, right?
I do.
Can you explain to me a little bit more about, I know that's a lot of healing involved in what you do, so kind of explain a bit more about what you do with kids.
I work with clay most of the time, and I use clay to give children the opportunity to express and explore their creativity, and I do this in a nurturing environment. And clay for me is one of the five elements, and for me that's what the essence of life is also the five elements.
Okay, what are these five elements?
Well, you've got fire, you've got water, you've got earth, you've got air, and of course the fifth is the spirit, which is us. And in order to make a finished item in clay, you need all of those elements.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it's bringing the child in touch with nature, with all that is. And children are not tainted by all this nonsense, negativity. Yeah. And so they tap in. And in fact, my adult students do that too. You know, once they start working with the clay, then they become one.
Mm-mm.
And they become centered. You know, when you see a pottery wheel going around the clay, that is that center. You're getting to that center. And I mean, the Native Americans have a medicine wheel, for example, and the whole aim is to get into that center.
Mm-hmm.
And working with children, it's just an incredible thing because they intuitively understand that.
Okay.
You know, I sit with kids and people will pass and say, well, what have you done to these kids? They're so relaxed and centered. And in the class 10 minutes earlier, they were running around like lunatics. Mm-hmm. And it's the clay. It's the way, I think maybe the way I approach it and allow them to just be and to be creative and to develop that part. You know, creativity is the unmanifest. It's the start of all things.
Mm-hmm.
In rune energy, you have the first, there's a rune symbol that's called Ur, and that's the unmanifest. That's where everything comes from.
Okay.
It's your wild, untamed ox, for example.
Mm-mm.
And that's what we all have. And the biggest thing that you can give, the biggest gift you can give to a child or to yourself is exploring your creativity.
Just allowing yourself to be.
To be and to explore that and to just think out the box. Mm. To, you know, and also when I work with young children, for example, art is a learned thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn how to draw. You know, it's you got to learn about foreshortening, you got to learn about perspective. There's a lot of technical stuff that you learn about. And when you work with clay, it's three-dimensional.
Mm-mm.
So if you make a table, you know that a table's got four legs and you put four legs on. If you were drawing that, you know, a child will draw those four legs, but they'll come out the top of the table because they haven't learned how to foreshorten. So working with clay just gives them that sense of pride, mm-hmm. that sense of achievement. Mm-hmm. And they also learn this process of rewards. What do I want to achieve?
Mm-mm. I almost kind of feel, though, that our schooling today, and we're going to talk about that in the next half an hour, but our schooling today, I almost feel, doesn't really prepare us as adults for the world we're living in today, because you're talking a lot now about thinking outside the box and you're talking a lot about being creative. Yet when you go to school, they very much try and push you in that box, and you may not wear your hair a certain way. You may not dress in a certain way. Yet, I mean, that is how we express our creativity. So what is your take on that? Because I kind of almost feel like our entire childhood creates this putting us in a box thing. And then you get to adulthood, you know, and when you reach adulthood, it's now you finish school and you're like, shit, what now?
Hmm.
And no one prepares you for that. It's kind of like now you get told, make a decision. What are you going to do for the rest of your life when the last 18 years of your life, you've only been given rules.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden now you have to go, oh, wait, now you're telling me to make the rules.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with it. And that also goes back to what we were saying earlier about religion. It's staying in those boxes of control.
Mm-mm.
It's when you develop your creativity, there are rules too. I mean, if you want to make a pot, you got to start with the raw clay. You got to say you're doing it by hand. You would roll it. You would go layer by. You know, there's a process of mm-mm. what you need to do. So you are understanding that process,
mm-mm.
and those rules apply to that process. So mm-mm. if you don't join the clay properly, it will break.
Mm-mm.
So like in school, if you don't do that, that will happen.
Mm-mm.
But you have that choice to take those things forward. And and as you said, in schooling, it's so controlled. And the saddest thing is that art and creativity, visual art and creativity, is so starved.
Mm-mm.
You know, when people say to me, oh, no, I'm not creative. I can only draw a stick figure. Mm-hmm. Why? Because that's when your education and your creativity stopped and was stifled.
Mm-mm.
And if we are able to think out the box, we can think those problems through. We don't just get those maths solutions and, you know, like a soldier kind of
mm-mm.
answer them. We think about it and we think about, well, if we did this, this would happen. And that. And we think about consequences. And it teaches us how to think and how to then move forward and make our life the way we want to live. We, mm-hmm. you know, the choices that we want. You know, we all write our own story. And if we are able to be taught to think that.
Mm-mm.
Because, you know, if you think of school, what you are learning in school, what kids are learning in school now, in 5 years' time is obsolete. It's
completely,
you know,
true, yeah.
It's about how to think. It's about how to manipulate things, to work things in a creative way.
Mm-mm-mm. Do you think creativity is something that can be taught, though? And the reason for my question is I often meet a lot of creative people, architects, graphic designers, you know, people that do it, and some of them believe it's a skill, it's something you're born with, and other people would say it's something you can learn. Where do you sit on that?
I believe that we are all creative. We mm-mm. all have it. It's how it's developed and how it's nurtured.
Mm-mm.
And creativity is not just being a Picasso or being a Leonardo da Vinci. It's mm-hmm. not about that. Your creative people are very often your A-types, because they think out the box. They are able to see the bigger picture, mm-hmm. to think linearly and to see the bigger picture, to actually have a goal, to be able to, I want this, I want to achieve mm-hmm. this, I can achieve it, how am I going to get there?
Okay.
And it's in business, it's architects, it's in every single field. Mm-hmm. It's creativity, I believe we all absolutely have.
Because to some extent, everything you do is about creativity.
Absolutely.
Whether you're creating a meal, making a cup of coffee, whether you're writing a business plan, there's all some form of creativity involved
absolutely.
In that.
Absolutely. How you tie your shoelaces, how you put your clothes out at night, how mm-hmm. you, all of it is, it's a different levels of creativity, mm-hmm. but it's how you think. And that is the most important thing. And that's in my teaching, is to teach and to expose children to think, to see
differently.
Differently. Yeah.
So if you're kind of finding yourself in this rut, right now, mm-hmm. we were talking about earlier, let's call it the 2016 rut. Let's give it a name. So if you find yourself in a rut right now and you're kind of like just miff about your life and where you are, what would you advise someone? You know, not everybody can go see a spiritualist or a psychiatrist or a coach or something. What would you advise? How does one start of getting out of this rut? Where can you start to say, okay, do these, I don't know if you can give us do these three things, start here, and then go from there. What would you say?
I think when I'm doing counseling, for example, I will say to somebody, what do you want? What really do you want? And somebody will say, well, you know what? I don't want to be unhappy anymore.
Mm-mm.
Well, okay, so if you don't want to be unhappy, what do you want? What, say that in the positive. Well, I'd like to be happy. Okay, so.
So let me just stop you there.
Right.
So one thing that I've picked up you always say is, instead of saying the negative, say the positive of that. So don't say, I don't want to be unhappy. Say, I want to be happy.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, mm. I want to be rich. I want to be healthy.
Right.
Instead of, I don't want to be sick. So, okay.
So once you know what you want, you're already on the road.
Okay.
And then you say to yourself, well, is it achievable?
Mm-mm.
Is it in my own locus of control, is it achievable? And first of all, before we even get there, let's be specific. What does happiness mean? When you say happy, what makes you happy? Do you want to have...
Because it means something different to everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, I want to have the perfect relationship. I want to be rich. I want to have the perfect job and be, you know. Okay, so if you want to be the perfect relationship or you want all of those things, what are you prepared to give up or to, you know, because... What are you prepared to get? How hard are you prepared to go and to struggle and to give up and to sacrifice to achieve that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. And in other words, how badly do you want it? And when you've established that, are you able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to own a big island. Okay, well, is it possible? And yes, it is possible, but...
So kind of not setting unrealistic.
Exactly. Make them realistic.
You're earning 10,000 rand today, say, by the end of the month, I want to be a multimillionaire.
Yes. And if you do want that, and it is achievable,
mm-hmm.
what are you prepared to do to get there?
To get there.
You know, we sit back and we think, oh, you know, I'd love to be on a yacht and I'd mm-hmm. have this perfect relationship and partner. And what have you done to get there? What have you done to get that perfect relationship? What have you done to get that yacht? And then... You then go through different processes. How will you feel when you've got that?
Mm-mm.
Who will you be when you've got that? So there's a whole lot of things, processes that you go through to mm-hmm. say to yourself, what am I going to do to get there? Because, you know, the pavements are littered with good ideas and good intentions. And mm-hmm. unless we actually know what we want and have a focused intention of how we're going to get there, it just remains a fantasy. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get to the end of 2017 and, oh, it was a really bad year. And again, I'm going to set my goals for the and when you really look at those goals, have you achieved any of them?
Have you tried?
Have you tried? Mm-hmm. What have you given up, to get there? And so it's our whole process of, you know, as I said, when I counsel, we go mm-hmm. through these different processes. What do I want? And then say to yourself, how long is it going to take me to get there? Mm-hmm. Give yourself a time limit. And then test yourself and say, okay, I'm giving myself 6 months to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you achieve that. And then you set yourself a next
goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you also go into sort of into the future, your future kind of what we call future pace. And you'll say, mm-hmm. all right, so I can see myself sitting on this yacht. And how will I feel? Who will I be? Mm-hmm. And you actually start to visualize it. And that's the creativity. That's part of the creativity.
It's kind of like The Secret. Because The Secret, I don't know if you've seen The Secret, but it kind of teaches you the same kind of thing in, I think, a different way, right?
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's the visualization mm-hmm. of you can get it if you want it. And that is the reality because we write our own script. We are the authors of our own script.
Mm-hmm.
We have choice. And, you know, if you choose, I mean, people say, I want to be happy. Mm-hmm. It's your choice. I have a choice and I choose to be happy. You got to then say, what is happiness? What does it mean to me? Is it achievable? Can I do this? What will I feel like when I've achieved mm-hmm. it? And what steps do I need to take to do that? Do I need to go to university? Do I need to do a course? Do I need to go and, I mean, it's like finding the perfect partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I want? You know, be clear in what you want. And then in the way in The Secret, you put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what you want, so the person that's there picks up that energy and will
mirror it back,
which goes right back to the loving kindness.
I think it's kind
mirroring.
Of, if I'm hearing you right, it's kind of a lot about taking ownership of your own life because I feel like we blame everybody else for the problems in our life. Like my partner is this, my manager is that, my company is this, my friends, my family, and we never go, well, I have done this to create what has happened to me mm. and kind of, I mean, we can't be to blame for everything because I mean, sometimes people are just assholes, so to say, but it's kind of about how we take it on and what we do with that, you know, because we're in charge of our own life, like you said.
And that goes right back to what I said right in the beginning of my understanding of spirituality mm-hmm. is that you step out of that triangle, you step out of that drama and you don't, you look at that mm. blame. It's not, what have I done to create that argument okay. or that anger? How can I change that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the responding. And when you respond, your heart is open, you're able to respond, and then you're able to make change.
Mm-mm-mm.
So it's as soon as you start blaming and it's their fault and the government and they did me wrong and they cheated, you're not taking ownership of it.
Yep.
You're not looking at it as a learning.
Mm-hmm.
As a mirror of what is going on around me.
I feel like I can talk to you for the next 4 hours. It's just absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
We definitely need to do this again. I think if one message we're going to take away from this is really to take responsibility for ourselves and just kind of be in the moment.
Absolutely.
So, thank you very much. We'll be right back after the break. All right, we're back. So if you would like to join in the conversation, you can WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090. Alternatively, you can also tweet us at cliffcentral.com. Wow, what an amazing first part and what a lesson to be learned to go into 2017. And I think there's no better way to start off the next part of the show than to talk to some scholars. So in studio, I still have Ruline, who is the mother of Sydney. So Sydney, you just finished matric, right?
Yeah.
And you just got your results?
Yeah, I just received them a few days ago.
You want to share some of them? You don't have to say percentages, but just tell us how amazingly you've done.
I got 6 distinctions and 1 B.
Okay, great. And then we have Nadia staying with us as well. She's just finished her first year of varsity. Hey, Nadia.
Hey.
And how did your first year go?
Well, I really enjoyed it. It was great. I loved it. I didn't really have a second semester, but I loved it.
Okay, we're going to touch a little bit on that second semester part. That's the touchy part today. And then with us as well, we've got Tanya, who's Nadia's mom. Welcome.
Hi, Lisa.
So we've kind of just thrown the parents in here. Initially, I was just going to chat to the kids. And the reason I thought it would be fun is because, you know, school is not just stressful for the kids. It's also very stressful for the parents, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think let's first start off with matric, right? So explain, how's school going nowadays? I mean, I haven't been in school 10 years. Is it still easy? How do you find, how the hell did you get so many distinctions? Like, first of all, explain that to me.
I think it's very stressful. Like, what I've realized is, like, this was a very, very tiring and pressurizing year. Mm-hmm. And it's just how you deal with that. Like, finding the balance and making sure that you don't, like, you take it seriously, but you allow yourself to just relax so you don't burn out. Mm-mm. I think it's, for me, how I got my marks is I just kept my goal in mind. I just had to keep what I wanted and my ambition in mind so that I could achieve it. When I got tired, I thought, is this going to help me achieve my goal? And it wouldn't, so I had to push.
Okay, so I see mom's rub a little bit off there on you, hey? So, I mean, how big a part of does your mom play in this, or your parents? How big a part do they play in you achieving your goal in school?
I think the main thing is that she shows me, like, my mom shows me how, like, the hard work will get you what you want.
Mm-mm.
That it doesn't just come when you sit there and you think, okay, I'll study the day before and I'll see how it goes and maybe it'll be good and I listened in class so I should be fine. Like, she's really taught me how, you know, that you have to set your goal and you have to actually work to it, and just having that support has been the most incredible thing, so that I can just be free to do and to work and to be studying for hours and it's okay, and that she's supporting me and
mm-mm.
bringing me tea when I'm exhausted and that sort of thing.
I think we often underestimate the massive role our parents play in our education or our life. Nadia, I mean, you now not staying in the house anymore, you actually stayed at university this year, so mom wasn't there every day.
Yeah,
did she still play a big part in your...
She doesn't, like, I don't stay with her, but I still phone her every day. I speak to her, like, at least once a day, like, while mm-hmm. I'm getting ready, I'll phone her, and she's getting ready at the same time. Because I think it's just having someone there to support you mm-hmm. and just to make sure that you're okay and, like, just to give you, like, mental strength and, like, emotional strength, because it's hard. Being independent is so much harder than it looks. Like, being an adult, it's so hard.
So, I mean, you've literally, this is your first year out of school, out of the house. Do you think that your school years prepared you for what you've learned in university? Or prepared you for what you've experienced in university?
No, well, I went to a really small school, like in Joburg South. There was like 40 kids per grade.
Mm-mm.
So moving from that to like a major university is completely different. And in school, you're so sheltered and everything is given to you. And at varsity, you have to go and look for your own opportunities. You mm-hmm. have to do everything yourself. And your parents aren't there to help you. They don't understand it either.
Mm-hmm.
They can help you like the first 2 weeks while you're registering. And after that, you're completely on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And in school, they'll tell you like, okay, this is how you fill this form in and you have to do this. At varsity, if you don't fill the form in properly, you're not going to get registered and you're just going to fail. And so,
and I mean, varsity, and we're not trying to scare you, Sydney. If anything, you should take all the advice here and prepare yourself. You're going to varsity next year, right?
Yeah, I'm going to Pretoria next year.
Great. You're in Pretoria too.
Yes.
Which Pretoria are you going to?
I'm going to stay, well, I'm going to be at the main campus and stay there as well. So it's actually nice to hear like how it is and the independence and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now you've got a friend you can phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Okay. So is there any advice you could give on what she should do or have with her to prepare herself for next year?
I think, well, that's what I learned. Like in school, I didn't work as hard as I should have. And so when I went to varsity, my main goal was just to like work as hard as I can from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people make that mistake. So they don't work hard from the beginning. And then it comes to exams and you just can't keep up.
Okay, so but you like also have a very good reason for doing that. What's your reason?
My older brother.
Okay, but also there's a besides the fair competition with the older brother who's in the same varsity, your mom was telling me earlier that you have a goal of where you want to go, where you want to work,
yes,
and what you want to do.
I really want to work at Norton and Rose Fulbright when I'm done.
If anybody's listening from Norton and Rose, you can contact Nadia on the following number.
And so I'm really trying hard to, because I know how competitive it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so from day one, I knew that I had to be better than everyone else to get into, mm-hmm, like, the major
So you've
companies.
Done exactly what Raleigh told us in the first half, is you've got a goal,
yes,
and you know exactly what you need to get there, and that's fantastic.
And it is extremely hard at varsity because you're so isolated and you're so alone. But, like, you're not. Don't worry. But
she's like, it's a horrible, but don't worry. It's not really horrible.
Yeah, like, it's not. It's, if you enjoy it, you do. It's great. But you have to work so much harder than you did in school,
mm-mm,
which might sound terrible because you just finished a very tiring year. But, yeah.
Don't you guys kind of think that or feel that if you took a break after school, like maybe took a year off, and parents, I'm not encouraging that at all. I'm just asking. If you had, like, a year off just relaxing, taking a break, that your first year at university might be easier, or Sydney, well, I'll ask you secondly, if you feel like maybe taking a break before jumping into university won't be more beneficial for you.
I think for me, I know that taking a break would completely throw me off. Like,
okay,
I'm someone that loves routine, and I'm sure it's like a gap year, you can have a routine and you can learn a lot. I think there's a lot of benefit in it. But for me, my degree, I want to study medicine, so it's a very long degree. And so it's almost like, I'm so excited to actually just jump in and get there and start my life. I think there's a lot of value in a gap year, but for me, I know that I almost feel like my happiness is going to be once I'm already happy, obviously, but finding that who I am and all of that and starting, mm-hmm, that at varsity and,
you know,
growing.
It's so amazing listening to the two of you because I've only heard positive things. You guys have goals,
yeah,
and I really think it touches on what we spoke about earlier, because I mean, I think when you get to adulthood sometimes, and I'm not saying you guys are not adults, but when you reach your 50s and that, you kind of go, well, shit, what now?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, the two of you have this goal. You want to be in medicine. You're already in law. You know you want to maybe go to Canada. You've got these big plans, and I feel like you guys are really on the good path here. Tanya, so for me, I kind of feel like you play a very big role for Nadia, the same as Raleigh as well, because I mean, these kids are amazing, and I mean, a lot of young kids that I speak to that are out partying, getting drunk, and that, you know, when you speak to them, they don't really know where they want to go to. What have you done? I mean, you've done something, right?
I've worked damn hard. Damn hard. No, I've just been there all the time. You know, mm-hmm, I've supported. I've cried when they cried. We've worked hard. And I've supported their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
so
I'm so proud of them. I've always told them, you have to, whatever your dream is, just believe and work hard.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know, and it doesn't matter. Sometimes you fail. But you get up and you go back it, and you just work, work, work.
I think my mom's, like, belief in us is ultimately what got us to where we are, because I know I've doubted myself so much,
mm-hmm,
and so has my brother, but my mom has not for a second doubted that we will be successful. And
I never doubt, never.
And I think that's what ultimately, that's what, like, what a gift she gave us.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, all my hard work was for nothing.
No. Really? You kind of feel the same thing? Have you got the same sentiment?
Yes, I think so. I think I feel very blessed that Sydney is so focused and so determined and so goal-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I at some point would say, don't you want to just go out and do a little partying, maybe have a little drink or just chill? Which she does do, you know, in her own sort of time and way. But she's incredibly focused, and I think I'd like to think that I was there just as her backstop,
mm-mm,
you know.
I really think that parents underestimate the massive role they play in their kids' lives.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really have a lot of direction growing up as well, but I mean, my mom also kind of didn't know where I wanted to go, so she was always there for me, but I kind of just drifted here and there. And I mean, you two have these amazing, strong parents that are guiding you, which I think parents out there, don't forget the role you play in your children's lives. It's really so important. Nadia, what I wanted to ask you is, you were saying that you didn't really have a second semester.
No, because
we all know why.
Yeah. And obviously the strikes got, like, very bad after the fee announcement was announced.
Mm-hmm.
And our varsity, so we were supposed to go on holiday in, like, we have like a spring recess. And the week before that, they just completely shut us down.
Mm-hmm.
On that, the Monday before, they cancelled the varsity. Like, they shut us down completely and said everything will be online. That's because the week before, we had been having, like, ongoing strikes where they would come into classes and, like disrupt the classes, make it hard to learn. So even that week before, no one was really going to class. And we just got back from the first semester.
Mm-mm.
So I was trying to learn new subjects and I didn't really have any class because they get disrupted. And so it was a lot. And our varsity, well, Pretoria just decided that it was going to shut everything down and go online.
Mm-mm.
So that we could finish the academic year.
Like, so you were basically learning everything online, yes, like on a website?
Like UNISA would be.
Okay.
And I know they gave Telkom SIM cards to people who, like, didn't have unlimited data or Wi-Fi or something, so they could still access it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our tests were online, our exams at the end of the year. But it was still a big struggle for people, I think, especially first years, because you're in this big system, like, you're not controlled, and now you're at home studying by yourself, reading through books, and so I think it affected a lot of kids. Mm. And also a lot of people who don't have access to computers and things, but it got, like, extremely violent at WITS.
Mm-mm.
And many other universities, and our varsity was trying to avoid that, so we couldn't go into campus. People had to go home. When we were writing exams at the end, we had, like, limited access control. So only some tests could write, on campus. And we would have to go and, like, there was strict security. Mm-hmm. They'd search bags. You have to scan in at every, like, door you go through.
Sure. Okay, so let me ask you this. You know what happened. You heard from the kids at university about what they were feeling. What's your feeling on all of this, your personal feeling?
On the fees must fall.
Yes, on the whole fees must fall, on everything. I mean, you know, we read the news, and one thing I do know about the news is they manipulate the way in which we receive the information massively.
Yeah.
So you've experienced it firsthand. You go to school with these children that were protesting. Mm. What is your feeling on it?
I definitely support the cause because the fees are way too high. And what people need to understand, it's not just the fees. It's not like school. You don't just pay the fees and then everything's included. It's textbooks, which are so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's living costs. It's transport. Like, if you live away from home, it's so much extra. And so many kids do have to stay away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And when the fees increase, so do the resident fees.
Mm-hmm.
So kids staying in res, their fees increase as well. So I definitely support the cause because many, many bright people, smart people could be changing the world, can't afford to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's NAFSA loans, which are loans which you'll have to pay back to the government. But to be able to make it, your annual household income has to be $120,000 per year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So if you get below that, you don't qualify.
Yes. No, but if you get above that.
Okay.
So you have to be devastatingly poor. Well, you know, like, you have to be really poor to get that. So people like police officers, nurses, teachers, their children, they really struggle to get them into varsity. Mm-hmm. Because they earn more than $120,000 per year, but it's still not enough to send a child to varsity, which is like $85,000 per year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's extremely expensive. Like, there's sometimes you'll use a textbook just for a semester, and then you'll have to buy another 800 rand textbook second semester.
Okay. Is there any kind of swap out of textbooks that you could do?
You can, but it's really hard to find. There's no
good quality, condition.
And there's nothing set up like that at the varsity.
Mm-mm.
So, like, I support the movement. It's just, and I know the system needs to change. I understand when they say that it's been commodified, because I do think that they're starting to make a profit off of students.
Mm-mm.
In all the ways, the textbook companies, everything in general. But I don't think shutting the system down is helping the system.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it needs to change, and I understand the decolonization of it. And although I can't really understand it because I've never been oppressed, but I understand
and support it. Babe.
Yes, I support it, but I don't think by shutting it down we're achieving anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government needs to play a more active role, and the government's corrupt. So it's very hard to get them to come to the party. It's very hard to get them there. And it's controversial, and it's very racial and...
Yeah, it's a very hot temperature very heated, at the moment.
Yeah.
Sydney, I mean, going into university, you've obviously watched and followed the news about everything happening at university. How does that make you feel?
You know, I supported and I can understand, of course, I've never been in the press, so I can't really completely understand, but I can identify and see where they're coming from. And like, I support it because everyone deserves the equal opportunities mm-hmm. and all those things. But I think, like, the approach is just... it's not okay with all the violence and that you're actually stopping someone else from learning mm-hmm. to get yourself to learn. It's just, it's
kind
it
of
doesn't
counteractive.
Exactly. And for me, it was scary because I was hearing how, you know, oh, well, the first years might not finish. They might not write exams, so they might have to repeat the year. And then what happens to me?
Where do you go?
Yeah, do I have to take a gap year? Do I have to do A-levels? Or do I have to, what do I do? Where... And we were never told anything, really, because everything was kind of...
wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Mom, how did you deal with all of that? I mean, you're sitting at home and you're watching the news.
It was frightening.
Mm-mm.
Nadia would send clips where she's locked in
buildings
and strikers outside. Yeah. I was neurotic. It was horrible. But I also felt sorry for her because she was so excited about her first year.
Mm-mm-mm.
Her first 2 weeks of initiation she couldn't have because of strikes.
Oh, wow.
So it started that way. She's so passionate about studying and going to class and not being able to do that. I felt sorry for her. It was hard, you know, it was hard for her to not be able to sit there and study and be part of this institution that she loves so much. But she did well. I just think the strike, they shouldn't be striking at varsity itself. Go to the government, go and strike there. Go and make their life difficult, yes.
I think a lot of people don't realize that the universities are not really the people controlling this.
Yeah,
the problem is sitting at the government itself, that they're the people managing.
Go and burn their buildings. They're burning books that are hundreds of years old.
Mm-mm.
You know, and you can never get that history back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Go and burn the government down. Go burn their buildings. You know, it doesn't make sense. Why disrupt the kids?
True, yeah,
to
absolutely.
Study? It's our future.
Mm-mm.
So, no, it made me angry and scared, eh? Yeah.
One of the reasons I've heard that they shut down the universities is because while they're busy striking for free education, they're not being taught, and so they don't get that education, and so therefore they're still being disadvantaged.
Mm-mm.
So through shutting down the university, they're disadvantaging everyone, but for a better purpose. That's one of the reasons I've heard, where they say if they go to strike at the government, it's just the ones who are involved in the cause, and they're missing out on class and tests.
So they want to disrupt everybody to
and
make
they say
a point.
Therefore, ultimately, they're still being disadvantaged through missing out on time to trying to achieve free higher education.
Okay, Rulene, I mean, obviously you've heard a lot of this now as well.
Sure.
How do you feel about your daughter going off to, you're going to be staying in Rays, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about her going off there and fighting for herself?
Yeah, I think I'm also a bit nervous, but I trust that she's ready for this. And we just pray that this will be resolved in a peaceful manner, because I just would love her to have this experience and make this dream, let this dream of her and all the students be a positive one.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Moms, thank you very much for the absolute amazing jobs you've done with these girls. Girls, you seem to have your life set out for you. It's amazing you being positive. You have your goals, and I really feel that you're going to be very successful going forward.
Thank you
so much for being here, and that's a wrap.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.